You keep your mind on the money, keeping your eyes on the wall.
You're my private dancer, dancer for money.
Do what you want me to do. I'm your
private dancer,
dancer for money, and any old music will do.
8:03 on a Tuesday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Let's not waste any time. Go straight to the phone lines. Joined as we are every week on this fine program, although this one might be spicier than usual. Thomas Drance, Athletic Vancouver, here on the Halford and Bruff Show. What up, Drancer?
Gentlemen, how are you? Mike, glad to see you're feeling better and back in studio. Nice to chat with you both.
It's nice to chat with you as well, Drance.
Drancer, why do you love the Leafs? Why are you cheering for them in the playoffs? Why do you want them to go on a deep run when everyone else in Vancouver wants them to choke in the first round?
Well, so there's a couple things. One is, I don't really have any type of rooting interest, but I recognize that in a world with no gate revenue, having the team that has by far the largest television audience advance the furthest is the best possible thing for this sport at the moment. Like right now, the Leafs going on a deep run would genuinely help the NHL dig out of the escrow hole they're in. It would help the flat cap era end as quickly as possible. It would meaningfully give the league like an existential boost.
Yeah, but I hate them. That is my retort.
Yeah, no, I get it. And look, I mean, there's a lot of people who feel the same about Team USA at international tournaments, right? Like, I never want to see Team USA not make the gold medal game. Like, I never want to see them win gold, especially when Canada's involved, don't get me wrong. But I always want them to make the gold medal game because it's the best possible thing for the sport that I like and for the people who I know that work within it, right? So, I mean, that's sort of just how I view things a little bit more macro, right? And I think that the best possible thing for the NHL is for the Leafs to make the Final Four. Now, additionally, I would add that I do think that the Leafs have managed things in a really interesting way. I think they've, you know, promoted interesting people. I think they've built a different type of organization in how they've approached things. And I do like to see that type of thing rewarded. But, you know, I'm an objective journalist. I'll cover teams based on their quality. I just happen to think the Leafs are the best team in Canada as well. But, yeah, I mean, I root for the sport. And for that reason, I also do think that there's a genuine interest. Like, there's a genuine aligned interest among all people who work in hockey right now that if the Leafs make the conference final, that would be a genuinely good thing for the NHL.
Is it enough to, I mean, I'm just thinking of from a Canucks perspective, is it enough to raise the salary cap?
No, not on its own. I mean, the escrow debt looks like it's going to last at least two more seasons beyond this, but it'll help. Every bit helps. You know, I think that's why the Canucks are playing 56 games, right? Like every bit matters right now as the league looks to dig itself out of, you know, what's been a really costly year for owners and for players, and especially for players, right, who have effectively accrued this massive escrow debt, and that's what's going to keep the flat cap for or keep the cap flat for a while. Any revenue you bring in over that sort of may diminish the length of time that the cap stays flat. But yeah, I mean, we're talking about like real growth that's going to have to get, like, you're going to have a $5 billion revenue season to undo the flat cap. A Leafs deep playoff run isn't going to help on its own, but it will help a bit.
It could be a very interesting offseason for them as well. I mean, regardless of what they do in the playoffs, they have so many pending unrestricted free agents. And I'm wondering if, to get away from just making this about the Leafs, mm-hmm. I'm wondering if this is going to be the way things are. Like, the offseason is going to be like this race to acquire bottom six players, but cheaply.
Yes. I mean, for sure. And the Leafs offseason anyway, I think centers around Zach Hyman. Like, if the Leafs were the Canucks, the conversations we'd be having about Zach Hyman in this market would be tremendous. But yeah, I think you're right. I once had a really bright front office person pitch to me that he thought eventually NHL teams would get to like a bid system where it's like, instead of approaching a specific player and being like, hey, like, we like you, like, da da da, you just like send out to agents like, hey, we have a slot.
Yeah.
Third line winger needs to be able to kill penalties. $1.2 million on a one-year deal, right? Like, who wants to try out? You know, and not that they try out, but you'd at least, like, indicate your interest. Like, that, sure. That would be, like, a job you'd be willing. Or you'd be like, well, I've never killed penalties before, but I really think I can do it. I'm willing to do it for $900K. You know, like that. I had that suggested to me that might be the evolution of sort of NHL roster building. And you can see how that would happen, especially in the flat cap era. But I love that idea. I mean, I think there's... It's clear that teams do that informally anyway, mm-hmm. but like the informalization of a bid process for players and UFAs, that's something that brighter people than I have legitimately kicked around as something that we could see in the NHL and perhaps accelerated in the NHL because of the flat cap era.
It's very soccerific. That's exactly what a lot of like European football teams, I know the Whitecaps do it as well, is you don't necessarily target mm-hmm. a player, you target a type of player, and then you go around to a network of agents, and there's a lot mm-hmm. of different companies that exist solely for the purpose of identifying players and then categorizing them.
Think I am that type of player.
Right, and then you fit in that way. Like, it's not like we're going to go after this guy. It's we're going to go after this type of player. What kind of player is going to fit for the amount of money that we have allocated?
It makes sense. I mean, I think that's a thing that hockey teams that are really successful too do in every aspect of what, you know, every aspect of their functioning is geared toward that sort of style or a specific style or a particular identity. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look at like the Carolina Hurricanes or the Tampa Bay Lightning in the draft, for example, like I think you can see some pretty consistent themes in terms of, you know, what the Carolina Hurricanes prize is, like defensemen with speed in the first three rounds, and then they take flyers on forwards that score throughout, right? That's the best drafting team in hockey, straight up. And, they allows them to run $10 million below the cap and still be an elite, elite team, right? The Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, similarly, right? The Tampa Bay Lightning, their approach is more about burning first-round picks for no reason. But nonetheless, yeah. When you look at – yeah, I think it's a sacrificial act to make sure that they find star top six quality centers in the third round.
Right, yeah. It's for the hockey gods.
But, yeah. But when you – I mean, if you go look at that – like, if you go look at Cirelli and Mitch Stevens, right? Mm-hmm. Mitchell Stevens didn't quite hit. Cirelli did. But there's a lot of similar attributes based on their sort of junior track record, right? It was like guys who scored but weren't – superstar scorer as a junior, speed, grit, played on successful teams. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the Lightning model. And, you know, whether they hit or miss, whether it's Mitchell Stevens or Anthony Cirelli, like they're targeting those guys and they're doing really well, clearly, having targeted those guys for years and years and been consistent about it. And, that pays off. So, you know, I think more than anything, it's identifying the way you want to play, identifying that identity, and then going about sort of building a roster that way. And in the Leafs' case, right, I think they changed the way they wanted to play, right? Yeah. They had these depth pieces that were fast, and they wanted to really play, like, truck meat hockey. Yeah. And I think they decided to sort of change things up, to be a little bit more traditional, to be a little bit more durable. And so out went Kapanen and Johnsson. In came TJ Brody and a bunch of slower vets, right? Spezza, Thornton, Simmons, and look at what they did at this deadline. And like, this is now the team. They paid a third round pick for David Riddick and a fifth round pick for Ben Hutton. And those trades will have worked from a Toronto perspective if those two players never play a minute in the playoffs, mm-hmm. right? Like, those are pure insurance policy deals.
Yep.
That's like trying your best to luck-proof your team, right? Like, yeah. We don't even want to deal with injury luck. No yeah. matter what, we're going to have an NHL-caliber player.
That's and, Gilman going to Dubas. Like, in my experience, sometimes if you go on a long playoff run, you can run into defensive injuries.
You end up calling Nolan Baumgartner, who's on vacation, and say, do you want to play in the Stanley Cup Final?
Well, I mean, look, that's probably part of it. But if you go look at Lawrence Gilman's likes, you'll notice that, like, a lot of them are Pep Guardiola / Man City content. Mm. Like, I think Dubas is a quiet citizen, not to get all soccerific on this again.
Yeah.
But it's like, what team's the most luxuriously deep, right? What team can lose three world class midfielders and no one even notices, right?
Right.
I wonder if the blue and white were inspired by the sort of light blue team in Manchester that looks poised to win the EPL this year, because that was pure insurance policy buying from the Maple Leafs at the deadline, and it was a fascinating thing to see.
All right, Halford, you can say it. What happened to Man City over the weekend?
They lost to Leeds 2-1. That's also 10-man Leeds.
Right.
With a very dubious red, which I did not agree with.
You just threw it out there. That's good. I knew you wanted to say it at some point.
Stuart Dallas is God.
That's enough.
92nd minute with 10 men. When everything in your instinct says sit back, protect the 1 point, protect the draw. No.
Can you put on the Canucks game?
I want to ask you something about this, though. Okay. I had a thought.
About Leeds?
Yes, right. Your thoughts on Luke Ayling. No, I want to know. I want to know something here. When we got back to talking about types of players and everything, I kind of had this little light bulb moment we were talking about. Is it when you can apply this to any sort of attribute or player. And I think it goes back to the crux of what we're talking about with not even just the Canucks, but there's a central line of thought with a lot of traditional hockey men. And so I'll use Beagle as an example.
Mm.
If they had taken the attributes that they wanted from Jay Beagle and said, we want these attributes, not necessarily the current holder of them, Jay Beagle, imagine how profoundly different that chase would have been. Because a big part of the reason that they had to give up what they had to give up was because, one, it wasn't the most attractive free agent landing place at the time. And two, there were other teams interested, right? So if you had kind of looked at that and even said, we want to bring in a guy that's got veteran experience, that's maybe won a Stanley Cup recently, that can win draws and play a fourth line role, I bet your cachet or folder of potential players would have opened up well beyond number 83. But because that they had a very linear way of thought about it, which was, well, the one guy we know that has all that stuff is number 83. All of a sudden, you go down a road where it's like, that's the only solution to the problem that we have.
Like Jay Beagle is Viagra, and the Canucks should have gotten a generic Viagra.
Blue Chew.
Yeah, or like that sort of thing.
Or at least been open to their other options. Right?
Yes, right.
I think this is a fair overarching criticism, right? And a fair overarching criticism, too, for some of the moves that the Canucks have made over the past 2 weeks. You know, Tanner Pearson, for example, I think was a player that the Canucks were dead set on having back, right? They weren't willing to explore options to find a player like Tanner Pearson or a guy who can do 90% of what Tanner Pearson can do on the ice, but maybe is 20% less good as a human being off of it, right? Like they weren't willing to explore or countenance those options, and that creates an inflated contract outcome, in my opinion anyway. Certainly more than Tanner Pearson would likely have got had he hit the open market, in my view. And I think the same probably with Gaudette too, right? Like the club was in the past 4 or 5 days intent on trading Gaudette. And so you take the best offer you can get for Gaudette because you have to trade Adam Gaudette, right? Not as opposed to sort of thinking about how you best maximize the asset value of a guy that, you know, at several points, whether, you know, on his sort of Hobie Baker rise through his, you know, 40 point over 82 game season, scoring pace season, could have been dealt for an awful lot more, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think when you arrive at any move with sort of a narrow focus on a specific player, you end up paying a premium retail price for that item, right? And look, the Leafs did it with Nick Foligno, right? The Leafs did it this week too.
Yeah.
So it's not unusual, but I think they looked over their options and decided Taylor Hall wasn't one. And they wanted a guy who was more in that Pearson mold. Like partly, I think the Foligno deal is influenced by the fact that Vancouver signed Pearson, right? That all of a sudden you sort of ran out of, you know, character left wing options. So the fact that Foligno got traded at 33 for a first and 2/4 on the one hand shows that good people do retain value, and perhaps that's an argument for re-signing Tanner Pearson. But I just sort of look at it overall with where this team's at in their development cycle and think that's an inefficient way to proceed. And I did enjoy, too, the Canucks sort of set the market, right, with, like, Iafallo and Lawton sort of coming in at a similar rate. Mm-hmm. And I still think that the market completely craters, by the time we get to July 28th for, you know, non-elite talent. So it'll be fascinating to watch. But yeah, I mean, there's a complicated set of dynamics, but I do think you're right. When you go in laser focused on a specific outcome, you do limit your options and often limit your value in sort of filling that.
It's Alfred and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. We're talking with Thomas Drantz of The Athletic. Drantzer, how intent were the Canucks on trading Adam Gaudette right now before the Canucks return to action as opposed to this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, the sense I get is they were pretty intent on doing so. And
oh, why is that?
Well, no, and I mean, I think, you know, the Jim alluded to Gaudette wanting more ice time, asking for a bigger role, but I think it's impossible to divorce what occurs from, you know, the facts on the ground, which are simple, that, you know, Adam Gaudette was the index case for a COVID outbreak that infected the majority of his teammates and coaches and was then traded before the club ever gathered again, right? I mean, that's the facts on the ground, and anyone can say whatever they want, but that, you know, that's all you need to know, really. And then, you know, I think for a variety of reasons, the club had decided that for, you know, fit reasons, culture reasons, their sort of view of things, he wasn't, you know, a future facing piece for them. And that's too bad. I believe in Adam Gaudette as a player. Like, I think he's got a really high work rate. I think there's a lot of reasons to believe that he can refine or retrieve some of the form that he had in 1920. And, you know, wish him well in Chicago. Enjoyed working with him when I got the chance. And, you know, it's an interesting dynamic for sure. But, yeah, I think the club decided that they wanted to deal him now as opposed to at the draft. And I do think that, you know, probably had an impact on what they were able to return in Matthew Highmore.
Drantzer, great stuff today, bud. Thanks a lot for doing this. We appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the week and all that it entails. We'll talk again next week.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Cheers.